Can this really be the end? To be stuck inside of Mobile with the Memphis Blues again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5, 36 minutes after the hour on this Thursday morning. We do appreciate you listening. Still to come on the program, Baldwin County Republican Party Chairman Michael Hoyt. That's in about a half hour from now. And then we'll wrap the program up with Rusty Glover, candidate for state auditor. He'll join us. First time in a while he's been on, but always looking forward to that. Joining us now, very pleased to bring on my next guest. Very kind to come on this show down here, even though it's way outside of his area there. State Senator Arthur Orr on the line with us. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good to be with you. Doing fine, Jeff, and looking forward to the weekend.
We all are, but I guess let's get right into it. Let's start here. First question I have, I saw that you were one of the no votes on the prison plan. Really, tell us about why you decided to go against it.
Well, there are multiple ways that it could have been done as far as the construction of the prison and how that process worked. I supported building the two new prisons, the one in Escambia and the one in Elmore, and then the rehab or renovations and whatnot, the Perry County facility, because I'm convinced that we needed to do something. Also supported the financing, but when it came to the process of the construction, I had my concerns on how that was put in the bill. And let my colleagues know how I felt about it, and the governor's staff, and voted my conscience on it.
So it really came down to the construction process. Was it just the no bid part of it? Was that the objection?
Well, we seemed to change the process midstream. In other words, Governor Ivey started with the leaseback plan, and you had, I think, three interested parties with CoreCivic back in that scenario. Two of them were selected, and then we changed to just a design build model in that legislation instead of doing what we traditionally had done, which was design bid build. And, there are a lot of arguments supporting what was done, save time, save money. The 2% variable there for the general contractor, not a whole lot of money in the grand scheme of things. So I get it as far as the practicalities of proceeding the way that ultimately was done, but I still just could not get comfortable with that process laid out and changing midstream like that.
I guess beyond that, do you think the problem, I mean, do you think the plan really addresses the problems, particularly the ones that the DOJ say?
Absolutely. I think, and that's the reason, on the financing and other things, was supportive. And of course, the locations, we need that, not, the leaseback plan, Jeff, had, we were buying the companies were buying new property to construct. Crazy. We should have just built on state land, and that's what this bill did. And that's, there's a lot of good things in it, given the tough situation we as a state were in.
Now, the two criminal justice measures, one goes, one doesn't. I think you supported it, but you had, especially what happened on Friday night in Sheffield. I know that the Attorney General and maybe some of your other colleagues in the legislature have spoken out, but where do you see the whole criminal justice sentencing reform argument where we are today? Is that something we need to start maybe looking at, but instead of, talking about, I don't know how many of these low-level crimes are really a problem in our prison system, but that, there's truth in sentencing that doesn't really exist. There's a lot of bureaucrats that have a lot of say. Is that maybe where the criminal justice reform argument ought to be these days?
Well, I think it'll certainly get looked at. I don't think the Attorney General has done himself any favors by taking a factually distinguishable situation where you had a guy that was out for 3 years and a DA who agreed to the sentence, and it wasn't a judge that crammed it down their throat, so you got a lot of distinguishing factors in the shooting that happened up in Northwest Alabama, from the bill that passed in the special session. And I think, you know, that all that can be discussed. I think it's unfortunate that you've seen politicians use it to be somewhat opportunistic about it.
Senator, I guess it's all water under bridge now. We'll move on to this. You were the architect of the vaccine passport, really, that's in place right now. And while it, you know, we're still, I guess, figuring out enforcement, how that's going to work. The discussions that we need to start looking at these companies, I think one of them in your district there, 3M, telling their employees they must get the mandate. I mean, they must get the vaccine or they face termination of employment. Is there a role for the state to play in that? Or is it we're in a right to work state? And that's just the part of it. That's one of the consequences.
Well, let me say this. The bill that was passed in the spring, you know, so many people said, this is, you know, we don't need to do this. This is crazy, or this is fear mongering, or this is, you know, tinfoil hat, whatever. It'll never come to vaccine mandates or limiting the public into bars or restaurants or whatever. And heck, you saw today a hospital that says, we're not going to do organ transplants for those that are unvaccinated. So back in April, Jeff, when all this was occurring, you know, it was very, very little. You had a bar here and a bar there across the country, and that was it. But now it's a whole different landscape. So when you talk about employers, I think every legislator, including the governor's office, their phones are just ringing off the hooks with very upset, very emotional individuals who are subject to losing their job because they do not want to take what is, you know, arguably considered a experimental vaccine, even though it's been proved by the FDA. You know, it did not go through the time clinical trials that they usually do. And so there's a lot of anxiety about that. So all that to say this, the pressure on legislators or, you know, the governor is building to try to do something. Now, whether that comes in time, I think that's an uphill battle, as folks right now are subject to either, you know, get the shots or get gone. And, you know, whether we try to do it in the redistricting special, that's right now the argument. And I think it's something we can certainly look at. There is a House bill that's been filed. I've been working on some legislation. So all that to say, I do think we're going to have to revisit the issue and see where the chips fall as to where the legislature is on this issue and where legislators are. And we'll just have to see.
I mean, you're right. You were kind of the early voice there, and you know, the Whitmires and Archibalds and AL.com crowd kind of dismissed your concerns that no one is trying to do this. We have nothing to worry about. And that here we are today, we're dealing with a totally different set of circumstances that how we know. Do you think if we knew what we knew was coming down and it would happen, that maybe you would have been more aggressive in, I mean, not just a passport ban, but maybe a mandate ban or something of that sort?
Yes, I think so. At that time, if you know, we had Joe Biden. Yeah, you can't rely on anything that guy says, but say, oh, I'd never mandate. And look at him now, cramming it down people's throats. All federal contractors up here in North Alabama, a huge impact on all the federal employees, contract employees, et cetera. And, you know, tens of thousands of these people that, you know, are going to be required to have it. Now, a lot of them probably already are vaccinated, but man, there's a lot that they are really going through a heavy time of deciding whether they want to walk or whether they want to, you know, get the shots.
Well, let me ask you this. there are protections. There are liability protections for these mandates that if something goes wrong, if something goes haywire, right, that there's very little. If you go out and your company tells you that you have to get the mandate, I mean, mandated vaccine, and you go out and get it, and let's say you suffer a complication from it, there's very little the individual can do. Is that also something that the legislature needs to consider, that the individual ought to have some options there if indeed the mandated vaccine does them wrong?
Well, that's where you get into the situation. And the answer is, yes, you could. You could say and put it under the workers' comp law and say, yes, they've got a workers' comp claim for the adverse reaction to the vaccination that was forced upon them by the employer. But then you look, you know, from the employer side and saying, listen, you know, to do my business or to conduct my business as a federal contractor or whatever, I have to mandate. You know, they're making me do this. My hands are tied. Now, I guess arguably you could say, well, you could walk from your federal contract, but in many cases, that's a huge amount of the business that you know, they do is with the federal government. So now you're going to hold an employer liable for something they were mandated or forced to do by the feds, by the, you know, their payor, the ones with whom they've contracted. So a very difficult situation for companies to be in. And that's something, you know, we're going to have to try to sort through. And I don't have an answer today, but that's certainly an option. Is saying this is a compensable workers' comp claim if you have an adverse, you know, medically acknowledged adverse reaction to a vaccine that was forced on you by your employer.
Finally, Senator, something I know that you've been working on, and I think it's important that we keep bringing this up, that the state takes in so much money, and every year we hear about record budget, record budget, record budget. We have these surpluses. We're even looking at an education lottery, perhaps, to even make the coffers more flush with cash. We need to start looking at tax cuts and giving some of that money back. And I know that last time we had you on, we talked about this, at least start small. But is it time to start looking at something bigger like the grocery tax or start talking about things of that nature?
I don't think so just yet. And the reason I say that, Jeff, is because we as a state, be it through private funds gained or gotten from the feds, you know, for the child tax credits, et cetera, rent subsidies, whether it's money that's come directly to the state, local school boards, you roll all that up into a big wad, and the number is over $40 billion. That's with a B, since COVID started. So that is a huge number for dollars coming into this state. And so I say that to say, you know, unemployment comp, you know, that's an all-in number. That number is going to go way down in a year and 18 months, even though there is a tail to the ARPA and, you know, it's over a period of years. That number is going to settle back down. And before we start talking grocery tax, and that's $400-500 million, $600 million number right there, that would be very, very substantive or a substantial hit on the ETF. What I've put out there equates to $50 or $60 million, but more or less, let's hit those that are going to be hit by inflation, those on fixed income, and that's usually the elderly that are on a pension or retirement system. And then let's look at the working families under $50,000 family household income as someone we may also be able to help. And there may be someone that has a better idea. That's fine. I'm not beholden to mine, but I'm much more comfortable talking about tax cuts in a $40 to $50 million range than I am in a $400-600 million dollar range. And once you start the grocery tax, Jeff, once you go down that road and you do you say, well, let's just do a percent, you know, the pressure will build to do a percent. It's a noble goal. Don't get me wrong. And we'd be good to do it. But we also don't need to gut education in the process.
Well, yeah, I guess at least we're having these discussions, whereas we really, in the past, I mean, how often do we talk about tax cuts in Alabama? And I think for a conservative state, a very conservative state, that it's a little underwhelming sometimes.
Yes. Well, you know, I think as conservatives, we do need to, if we do feel like we can pay our bills, we can meet our needs and expectations and commitments, then if there is money left over, and that's a big if, and the future looks okay as far as a continued revenue stream to sustain our commitments, then yes, we always, in my opinion, need to consider and have on the table, front and center, sending money back to the people and not huddling up in the back room saying, how can we spend this money this year?
Senator, you're always very kind to come on this program, and we look forward to hearing again from you soon.
Thank you, Jeff. You have a great day. God bless.
Thank you. That was State Senator Arthur Orr there. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. From Manhattan.